All right, welcome to Mauricio Mejia Live. Today, we're bringing on a special guest. We're doing a special edition of Mauricio Mejia Live. We are actually going to be interviewing today the person that believed and gave me the opportunity to take it to the next level in nightlife here in the Silicon Valley. I want to welcome my mentor, my friend, and my father to the show today.
It's Mauricio Mejia Live. Entertainment guru, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, author, and speaker. It's Mauricio Mejia Live.
Welcome back to Mauricio Mejia Live Special Edition. We are here in downtown San Jose, heart of Silicon Valley, and we're with a very special guest, Harry Evans. Harry, welcome to the show, Mauricio Mejia Live. Thank you for making the time being here today.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah. This is a real pleasure for me.
Well, it's a very special interview today or conversation. Really, there's no formality here. I think that it's just, I wanted to take the time to have a conversation and talk about everything that we have gone through, the years that we've got to share, 30 plus years of time that we've been together, and the knowledge and everything that you did for me and for where I am in my journey. And today it's really just acknowledging that and then sharing with the world and allowing us to continue to talk about the things that it takes to be, one, an immigrant to the United States, two, have the business mindset, because the show talks about entrepreneurship and what it takes to be an entrepreneur. Not only that, but then to have somewhat of a balance in life. And being that we picked a career in our life that there was the balance, if there's any balance, right, depending on what path or the type of person that we chose to be. And I'll add to that, in one of our conversations one day, you asked me, Mauricio, there's two kinds of people on this planet. There's the person that likes to ride the roller coaster, and then there's the person that likes to go fishing. And both you and I, with looking at each other, you can see the excitement that just came out, because we both knew we were the both people that like to ride the roller coaster ride. But really, for me, I want to share with the world the journey from we're going to even go back to a version of childhood to where you at today. And just again, want to just start with that journey. I want to share that time with you. So I want to go back. You're an immigrant to the United States. You were born in Iran. You're both father and mother. I know you have siblings, and I'll let you go into that. But your father and mother had a bigger vision and a bigger dream for you. And obviously, they wanted to have a better life or bring your family into a better life. And that's where really the journey starts. Can you share with us that journey and how you got to the United States?
Well, my father used to work for a company called the Comsox that used to bring the rations to the soldiers, and he was the driver. I think after watching the American soldiers in Iran during World War II and so on, he got the feeling that the United States would be a better place for his children and the family, and he put his name down to get a visa when Eisenhower had given the people who worked for the Allies to come to the United States. And we waited 21 years. I wasn't even born then when my father did that. It was a beautiful surprise to me when one day said, hey, we're going to America. That's how they say it. Whoa. Did I tell all my friends I'm going to America? When most people in that part of the world, they saw America as the beacon of the light, where you go for no matter what it is, whether you want to have a family life or you want to become billionaire or just have a job. Yeah. So you go home and have a food to eat. And this is what makes an immigrant. They already come to this country with a thought, an emotion, a feeling of wanting to accomplish. Wait for 21 years, just imagine that.
Time-wise, what year was this?
1957.
There you go. People might not know who the president at the time was.
Oh my God, now they know how old I am. Don't ask me how old I was when I came.
Now, it's not an easy journey, and it wasn't an easy journey. Share with us what does it take? What did it take? And the sacrifices that it took, because you can't just pick up and go and just say, hey.
Well, there is a difference in your conception of what's happening today versus when we came. The American, the government had already set up. They flew us from Tehran Airport to Italy. Centro de Migrazione. So you go in there, they keep you there, and they see if you're physically, medically ready to go, give you all the injections you need, and so on. Then from Italy, they put us in a boat called the Vulcania. And, of course, that boat had three classes. The first class, the second, we were in the bottom third. But that was a heaven. For what we came from, that was, as Italian would say, mamma mia. So,
yeah, wow.
That's how we came. So it was, when we got to United States, they took us to a city, Valley Cottage, with already apartments were set up. And they put us in there. And then they asked us if we have families here, which was in Boston. There is a city called Watertown where all Armenians live there. So that's where we moved.
Interesting when you say that. The process coming from the other side of the world to the United States and going through, I'm assuming, New York was...
Yes.
So going through the through that... During that time, were they still doing the Ellis Island processing, or how? Where were they processing the immigrants that were coming to the United States during that time?
We were actually processed in Italy.
Oh, wow.
Before even they sent you here.
Wow.
That means all the injections you need to do and everything else about you is processed before even you get to U.S. So once we got here, the... Valley Cottage that I said, it's a little bit outside of New York.
Got it.
And they did take us to New York. And when I got there, we have only five-story buildings in Iran. And I look at this building and I keep going. My head is going up and up and up. I told my father, I said, Dad, I feel like a mouse. He said, why? I said, look at these buildings. We've never seen one of those.
Yeah.
He said, well, son, we have 4,000 years of history, and these people are only 250 years old. Go out there, show them how it's done. Don't cry, don't complain, none of these. Just do your best, and then see how far you could go.
I remember those the stories you used to share when I first was introduced to your universe, the universe of nightlife, and then I look at it as your mentorship and your guidance, and you share the stories about the 4,000 years of history and the knowledge and the experiences that the generations before this country was even discovered. And when you would share that, it would put life into perspective for me that we're here only 250 years, if that. And yeah, we're still in if you look at it in perspective, we're still the new kids on the block, but that eventually will wear off or do something. I don't know. We don't know what the future holds, but the history that you have or that has been shared upon, and you shared it, it has made a big impact in myself, because it also made me believe in the things that you shared with me and believing in myself.
Well, the point is that if a human being, this is said in Iran, a person who does not know what he wants, and he's not aware of it, his ignorance, that person lives in an ignorant world. When a person wants to do something and he knows it, or if he doesn't know that he has no knowledge, he goes and learns from a person who knows how.
That's right.
Because there is nothing cannot be done. When a person tells you it can't be done, what he's saying is he doesn't know how.
That's right.
So you go and seek the person who knows, acquire the knowledge, and then you'll be amazed how easy it will be.
Yeah.
Because the knowledge is what makes success.
Absolutely. We have a testament to that. The knowledge that you poured into me has allowed me to then flourish and become the man that I am today.
But you have to also remember, Mauricio, some people listen and absorb what you say.
Yes.
Other people goes in and goes out. Yeah. It's, you can't always give the credit to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's how the student absorbs the knowledge.
Yes.
That's what happens in many. That's what my father said. No excuses. Don't complain. Go kick their butt. Show them how it's done. Another thing, culture and class is embedded in us. You've never seen me walk in front of a woman or anything like that. Or not open the door. You want to see this funny? When I first came to the United States, I thought I was a gentleman. I tried to light this lady's cigarette. She said, well, I can light my own cigarette. I don't need you. And I thought, oh, my God. What happened here?
Yeah. Culture, right? Different.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Because my mother embedded in us, you are going to do something bad in the United States. I'm going to be ashamed in front of the world. Mm. Mom, the world doesn't know you. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, the world got to know who Harry Evans would eventually who you were going to become eventually as an adult. So we're in the East Coast right now. Where specifically are you in the East Coast? Because we've done New York, Baltimore, Boston. Boston, okay.
Boston, there is a city in Boston. It's called Watertown.
Watertown.
Where all the Armenians from the genocide time.
Wow, okay.
Went to Beirut from Lebanon. And there were actually allowed to come to the United States.
Got it.
And some of them in the West Coast are in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And on the East Coast, there were in Boston City called the Watertown.
Yeah, there's a big population, too, in Glendale, in Southern California.
Well, that is the new generation.
Okay.
We're not talking about in my time.
Got it. Okay.
The new generation, when the revolution happened in Iran,
uh-huh.
a lot of the Christians, as well as wealthy Persians,
mm-hmm.
moved into L.A.
Yeah.
They loved California and L.A., and that area, you're right.
Yeah. So we're in the East Coast. How did you end up in the West Coast?
Well, because my aunt and my oldest brother, that was a civil engineer.
So really quick, you hit brothers and we didn't talk about it. Siblings, how many siblings are with you here in the U.S.?
Well, it was my two brothers and we were three of us. Okay. Three boys in a family, no
there
girls.
You go. Okay. All right, so we have three brothers. Yeah,
and also my aunt was already in San Francisco.
Got it.
So when we were in Boston, we didn't intend to stay there.
Okay.
It was just where they took us to.
Got it.
And then, of course, we spoke with my aunt and my brother. And first, my mother and my father came here. I stayed there working and paying their bills so that they can travel and so on. And then I, with a few of my friends, we got in a car. It was a journey and a half, driving all the way to the United States. And we stopped most of the cities that it would be fun to go, including Las Vegas.
Nice. So from Boston, the town that you're in, what were you doing there first, though? What kind of work? You just mentioned work. What was that? And then what age are we talking about?
Well, I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
So I was 17 years old.
17 years old, all right.
And between 17 and 18, very close by.
Thinking big, obviously.
Well.
Dreaming big.
I was dreaming big. Let's put it this way. Yeah. And the dream, because this is what you finally decide. Now, see, there is in my country, we have the best carpets in the world in Iran. And when I say my country, I'm Armenian, and call me Harry Evans. My last name is Avanesian.
Yes.
But I'll tell you why I became Harry Evans.
I can't wait to hear that one. But your true name
is Harutun Avanesian.
Yes.
And Harutun means resurrection in Armenian. Mm. When Christ went to heaven, my mother was very religious. And so they gave me that name. They thought I deserve it. Far from it.
and you're the baby, I'm assuming.
I'm the youngest.
The youngest, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a baby. I'm just the youngest.
I'm sorry, Harry.
No,
yeah,
that's
you're the youngest out of the three brothers.
Yeah.
Harutun Avanesian. Wow. So She said, the first two just wasn't happening. This has got to be it. So.
Well, actually, my mother and I, we had a very close relationship.
Yeah.
And we used to go on a date every week on a Friday where my mom would cook everything, or we go out to eat, and allowed me to have my first cigarette in front of her. So I'm not doing it in the back where nobody could see it. So that made a lot of good impression on me and the way I was brought up. And everybody says it's because my mother was looking a gentleman in her life.
Mm.
So she brought me up to go through that level of civility and being a gentleman, what you can or cannot do.
Absolutely. And that plays a big part as you're growing up during that time, especially here in the United States. Even though there was that experience where you offered a woman to light up, being a gentleman in this in that time, I'm going to assume that it, I mean, I look at old movies and I love the gentleman part. I believe in that to this day, in opening up the door, never walking in front of a woman. I believe in those in those what some people might look as simple or what I, it's the basics. It's the right thing. It's the way that I understand.
I asked my mother, and she just defined it this way. She said, American women are much more self-reliant than the women, the country we come from.
Yeah.
We look at them as the weaker sex, so we offer our help and do everything else. And also, in Iran, you wear this kerchief on your neck and you go out, you have to do one good deed for the day. This is part of your upbringing. Carry somebody's water or a kid doesn't know where to go. So this is embedded in you. It comes natural.
Right.
You come in, you want a cigarette, here it is.
So that's the good deed of the day. Yeah, open up the door. Exactly, walk behind.
Exactly.
Simplicity. All right, I like it. I like it. And then, of course, we're young and we want to make an impression.
But it's a good lesson for me that not to interpret American women that way.
Yeah.
They are self-reliant. They're taught to be that way. So that is their right.
Yeah.
So we just let it go with that.
So we're in the journey. You drive across the United States. It's you and your friends?
Three of us.
Three. So there's four in the car. And you go through some major cities. And we're going to skip all those because they're probably not as exciting as Las Vegas. Unless, did you have any, was there any exciting stops along the way? Any city that caught your attention?
Well, what I really along the way discovered when we got to New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we went zigzag to get ourselves here.
it wasn't a straight shot, okay.
Yeah, we just wanted to empower us with the knowledge of knowing we're going to California. I mean, that means the world in my top part of the world. So the people were so different from Boston.
Yeah.
They were very hospitable. Where in Boston, people were very opinionated.
Yeah.
And the first thing I ever heard, we in Massachusetts, we do things this way.
Okay.
And then here I'm going with people that are so friendly.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing in Texas. When I go into Vegas, Ave Maria Preciosa, for my sins. We went in there and in front of it, because we didn't have any money to go in
Sin
the
City.
Club.
You went to Sin City.
And I'm looking at it, that all these generals are coming, one woman this arm, one woman this arm, beautiful blonde, long hair, something you don't find those in Iran. And I go, oh my God, where have I been all this time?
Oh, it's like, it's a new world.
It was a whole new world.
In the middle of the desert,
and,
by the way.
In the middle of the desert, but not only that. I mean, we had seen this in the movies, but nobody takes movies seriously. It's produced, the production, but we see it in live. Well, that made a very big impression on me.
Mm.
Very.
Impression, big words, big thinking, open, your mind is exploding. Do you think that seeds are now being planted in you? You're seeing glitz, you're seeing glamour, you're seeing lifestyle, you're seeing...
Glamour and the lifestyle, those two words are important.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any of those.
Yeah.
And the fact that I can actually be there
and
be part of it was great. Not that I could have been at the time. I didn't have any money in my pocket. $50, that was it.
How much time are you in Vegas? I mean, you're...
We couldn't even get a hotel to stay. So we watched the whole action, so on, and went and had breakfast. And the next morning...
On the road again.
On the road again. We went to Los Angeles to, because that was where I had to go to school. I wanted to see what LA was like. And then we ended up in San Francisco. At that time, San Francisco was a beautiful city.
Wow. You say school. What? So did were you accepted from when you were in high school to go to school in California? Is that part of the reason why you were coming out here? Or?
Well, no. We came because of the family.
Got it. Okay.
And then my brother guided me and my middle brother, Eri, to go to... I went to City College of San Francisco.
Okay.
And he went to the State College of San Francisco.
Got it. So San Francisco, L.A. is a destination. San Francisco becomes home.
With a family.
Got it.
That's right.
Got it. Okay. I can see where this is going. All right. So now we're in San Francisco. You're doing some junior college. Harry, you are known in the South Bay as the godfather of nightlife today now, right? I mean, you've left a lot of... You've made a lot of impressions. You've left... You've affected and impacted a lot of people, whether it's good, bad, indifferent... We're gonna get to this that part of it, but you're in this young age, you're going through junior college. Where do you see that this nightlife or these little seeds that start to get either planted in you? Because San Francisco is a global city. It's got a lot of arts. It's got a lot of music during that time. What year was that when you were here?
Well, it will be like late 1950, 60, 70, around that time.
You're going through it. It's like almost like an industrial revolution going on.
Yes.
San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness. The hippies, the whole nine yards. I have to tell you stories about that, Bobby.
So we're going through this time. And yeah, so that year, there's just a lot of stuff going on in the United States. The United States is a melting pot, but it's at the same time, it's so new and fresh that they're trying to figure out what is what and who is what. And we have all these, as the world is starting to really, or the United States is really starting to develop. San Francisco is, I mean, it's got to be developing. It's already got 40 years in under its belt after the earthquake, the big earthquake. So there's a lot of things happening in San Francisco. You're seeing this now. You're probably seeing a lot of lights, glitz, and glamour as well, and lifestyle. You're going to school. What starts to pave the way for where you ended up being in nightlife?
Well, three things that happened when I was in San Francisco. Yeah. And because I was working in a movie studio in Iran, and when I was in Boston, I worked in a laboratory because I want to stay in the industry.
Okay.
And in San Francisco, I got a job in Multichrome Laboratories. We're doing color movies and films, and I was near a Fred Astaire dance studio, and I thought maybe I'll go see what it is. I love to dance. And I went there, and there was a nice young lady. Her name was Sally Reese, and she liked me. I was a good-looking boy, and asked me to buy a dance lessons that she would make me a really professional dancer.
She was hitting $300, up on you.
$300. They arranged the financing because I did not have any money. And they arranged the financing. So what I was supposed to learn to how to dance, basically, she liked me so much, so she taught higher level. Because dance business comes bronze of the lowest level, makes you a comfortable dancer, silver, which makes you a stylized dancer, and the gold is like a professional level.
Right.
We're in the Dancing with the Stars.
All right.
She taught me all of that.
Wow.
In 30 lessons.
Okay. You're and a quick then, learner, huh?
Yeah. Well, I liked it. I liked it. And of course, women in your arms, how can you complain? So I got a job in the dance studio, Fred Astaire Dance Studios.
And this is
San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah, in downtown. Of course, downtown was beautiful in those days. And so with all of that and graduating from the City College, then I thought for a better, higher education, I will go to Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I got a job in Fred Astaire Studios first, and then I went to another bigger studio called Bill Williams. So I have an income coming now. And I started taking courses in the University of Southern California about cinema.
Got it. USC.
USC.
There you go. Trojans, there we go. USC.
Yeah. And I started writing scripts, and people loved it because my style was very different.
Yeah.
And then, like, I wrote one called The Moment of Emotional Madness, and another one, which was supposed to be funny one, I wrote about me. When I came to the United States, I couldn't speak English. For my friend took me a restaurant, and he says, what would you like to eat? I said, I don't know what to eat. Just get me some apple pie and tea. So, okay. So I ate apple pie and tea for a month. And then one day I went in the line to go get, I guess it was McDonald's, to get a burger. And I got in the front and I said, burger, hamburger. And the guy asked me, at the time I didn't know what he said, how would you like it cooked? Hamburger. What would you like on it? Hamburger. Burger. People in the back getting, come on, what come are you on. Doing? Apple pie and tea. And I wrote a lot of things, the scripts and so on. And then I was a part of when they were having sessions like we're having, movie stars coming in so we could learn how the movie stars are. And Tony Curtis was one of them, and he looked like a kid. And as popular as he was, and I thought, wow, this kid. And then the crew, I asked them, how long will it take me to get there? They said, listen, when you graduate, you're going to have to sweep the floor for 10 years before anybody will recognize you, especially when you're a male.
Yeah.
And I began to realize that maybe the dance studio, it is now, I'm a good dancer, and I'm doing competitions, and I have women in my arms 8 hours a day. How sweet it is, as Jackie Gleason would
You don't say. Have to be a superstar or a movie star to have a woman in your arms. You got it going on already.
Well, so. It was natural. I didn't have to go looking for it. They were coming to take a lesson, and I was a good-looking kid, you know? For your question, how I got there, I changed the entire thing because I wanted to be wealthy and have the Playboy life younger.
Yes.
Not wait until I'm 40 years old.
Correct.
So that's what I went into the dance business.
Yeah. Wow. I run parallels with what you just shared because I made that decision at a young age as well. I was going to the University of San Jose State when I moved from Los Angeles to the Bay Area. And I was already in nightlife. I was in love with nightlife. Growing up in LA, I got that opportunity at a very young age, passing out flyers in parking lots, and I was exposed to the nightlife at such a young age because I was able to make my fake ID to get into the nightclub. I mean, I had my junior high picture cut out and put into my high school into someone else's high school so they can go to the teen clubs. And then from the teen clubs, I was like, no, this is, I like these girls, but I just wanted more. I wanted to see the environment. And when I got into the first 18 and over nightclub, which was the Red Onions in West Covina, I was like, whoa, this is, and I had my first Long Island iced tea I was underage. And for me, my brain just started to explode. And then the people that I was with, I mean, the VIP, the red carpet treatment, just the whole experience. I fell in love with that lifestyle. The glitz and glamour is a part of it and everything that comes with nightlife that I saw. And I just knew that I wanted more. And I knew that when I saw the whether he was the owner or the manager or the promoter or the DJ, and I saw how the women would flock to the person and the person that had the control, whether it was the Velvet Ropes or, hey, I want to hear this song, and the DJ would play the song, and then just the reaction. Those were the things that I fell in love with, and I remember when I made that decision at San Jose State when I said, you know what, I'm done. I was already in nightlife. I already knew what I wanted to do. I already knew that I had an opportunity, and we'll go into that later on, but I knew it. That was the direction that I wanted to be. And
principally, there is no standard way, as my father used to tell me when we were traveling in a boat and all that European razzle-dazzle from first class to the third class. We could see the women, the way they dress, and so on and so forth. And he used to tell us the people are not the same. And that there's no such thing, this is how men are, this is such women are. There is no such thing. Mm. It's every individual is an individual.
Yeah.
And the guy who, like you told me about the fishing, that what they was trying to say, some people, all they want to do is a job. In the U.S., get a job, get a home, get a family, get a kids, go to work, go home, put your feet up, watch TV, eat your food, have a little sex, and go to sleep. And they're happy with
Sounds pretty routine, right?
Well, there is.
And that sounds okay,
see,
right?
No, but this is, I tell you something, they like, this is how they interpreted when I used to talk to them, they looked at me in the razzle dazzle, which we'll get to it, is they like the comfort of knowing what it is.
Oof.
And they like that. And when I got into nightclub business, I'll tell you this, there were people who would come and have a table to sit. And there are those guys, they couldn't sit anywhere. They had to go from room to room, from table to table, dance this girl, stay there, now go get the other girl. And you could tell the character who wants the comfort zone.
That's right.
They don't want any more than that. And the other guys want the unknown. The unknown is exciting.
That's right.
The other one
hunting,
is a routine.
We're hunting. We're hunters.
We're hunters. So we blame God for that one. And so when you're asking me about Harry Evans' name, when I quit the thing and went to work for the Bill Williams dance studios, and I had to go into competitions and so on, when I told them my name, Harutun Avanesian, the guy looked at me like this, Harutun Avanesian.
Good looking guy, marketable, but you don't have a Hollywood
Harutun
name.
Harry Avanesian Avanes Evans. Harry Evans. Oh, that fits you good.
Oof.
Because in those days, everything was short name, like the drink Tom Collins. Vodka 7-Up. Jerry Lewis, you know, this and that, the other, Elizabeth Taylor, and so Harry Evans. So that became my name.
Wow.
And I am doing good in the dance studio, and I have a lot of students. So they put me in a sales department, because when a new woman comes in, they taught me how to get them to take dancing lessons.
Oh, man, a little exploitation here. They got the good-looking guy, Harry Evans, you know. And then, you're the part of the welcoming committee here.
And then there's a routine set up. You know, when they first come in, I introduce myself. I give them a little short half-hour lesson. And I tell them how agile they are, just building dancer. Oh, got two left feet. No, there is no such thing. You have a right foot, left foot. You have to know how to walk on them. Then it went. I would do a competition style routine with another student that has been mine for a year. So then this student walks, looks at that beautiful dancing routine.
Oh.
And I go and dance with them. I tell them, see that one? You could be that girl.
You can be that one. Oh, man. Wow. Selling the dream.
Like, exactly.
Selling the dream.
And actually, it wasn't bad because in those days, women didn't have that much socializing to do.
Got it.
Especially, so what happened was that they enjoyed. We used to have parties every Friday, Saturday night. Mm-hmm. They used to have a little band who played the music. So this is like their weekend out. And they work all day, so on, and come over there to dance around with the good-looking boys.
Yeah.
I mean, how sweet it is.
How sweet it is, huh?
Yeah. It was that. And what changed from there for me to come to San Jose, if you want to know.
Well, so we're in L.A. You're done with cinema because and you transferred, you transitioned into dance, teaching. That's it's building your income. You have obviously a bigger dream. You're working for a school, and I know. And we've talked about this in the past where. You wanted more. And I think this is where we're going into is that what brought you to San Jose? Now, did you go back to San Francisco at any point? Or did you come straight from Los Angeles
Happened. When I was in LA, I was working for the dance studio. And I realized there was a Christmas party. And the owner, Bill Williams, asked me, Harry, something different food to serve in a Christmas party. I said, well, yeah, Persian lamb kebab. Oh, great. gave me the credit card. I went and bought a bunch of beautiful lamb fillets and the rack of lamb and so on. And then I cooked the shish kebab. Everybody loved it. But I was mesmerized by his house. It was a palace.
Mm.
And I thought, well, if this guy owns a dance studio and he's living like a king of Iran, why can't I?
Why can't I?
So, but I don't have the knowledge to do all that. So what I did, I started doing other people's job. The manager of the studio would go there, have me to do the his job.
Mm-hmm.
So I was known as a stupid Persian.
Mm.
Because that idiot, you don't have to pay him. He does the job for free.
Mm.
How stupid can he get? But mine was what I was taught.
Yeah.
The job you want to do well, you have to learn how to do it.
Absolutely.
So I learned everybody's job,
yes.
A to Z.
Yes.
What you need to know.
Yes.
I thought, well, I'm pretty ready to go do my own thing.
Yes.
Something happens. The owner came to the studio and the manager wasn't there.
Mm.
And he asked his wife that also used to work in the front desk as the when people just come in, interviews and so on, was working there. Yeah. So he called me in the office. Harry.
Necessity.
Yes, sir. I need somebody to take over manager's place. I understand that you have some knowledge of it. And I said, sir, a little more than some. I've been doing it for about 6 months. Oh, well, so you have a good knowledge. I'll tell you what, I'll reward you. I'll give you $50 more, $200. I said, sir, how much do you pay him? What has that got to do with it? Well, I'm doing the job. Then his wife got into the picture and he said, listen, let's give the job to Harry for $50 and Harry, you take it. If you do well, then we will increase the pay for you.
Mm.
She got him down a little bit
and
got me thinking. And he gave me a little wing.
Yeah, I got you.
And
were you teaching her to dancing?
No, I knew that she would do it.
You taught her dancing winking too?
No, I knew I would go that far. Husband would kill me. Are you kidding me? No.
Okay.
You don't kill the mother goose that lays the golden eggs. No way.
We'll talk about that one later on in the show.
For sure. So anyway, so I got the job and then little by little, I became head of the sales department.
Mm-hmm.
I realized there is money in here.
The one you went to his home.
Yes.
Lives in a Taj Mahal.
Exactly.
Making and all these good times, and those seeds are now planted, being planted.
Right.
In
I have a picture. Mm. There is an image now because I knew other people have homes like that, but I never was in it.
Yes.
So here we're going in his house, and I'm going, whoa. This is the nice place to live.
Yeah.
So my taste is getting higher.
Yes.
And I have done what my father said, the ability of the know-how. And I came for Christmas party in San Francisco. Then I thought I'll go to the old studio that I got my dancing lessons to see Sally Reese, how she's doing, the one who taught me how to dance.
Mm-hmm.
In there, I met this girl named Dolores Beres who had a studio in San Jose, Santa Clara and 2nd, upstairs from a El Rebozo Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
She said, I want to sell my studio. If you want to buy it, $10,000. That's not much money. In those days, it would be $100,000. You're talking about in 1962.
Okay.
So I said yes. I said yes. Just keep me in mind. I'm going to go back, tell my boss that I want to do this, come back. And she said, fine. Nobody would buy it anyways. It was a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went and told him, and I told him why, I told him when I went to your house, I saw you, and you wonder where I learned all of this. I did it here and I did it for free because I love the business.
Yeah.
He said, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do for you. I will hire someone, you stay and train him the way you do things. I will go over there with you. I will set your studio up. Because he knew everything.
Wow.
And so what happened is we shook hands. I took his word for it. And I did train the guy he brought. I tell him so good that the business even went up, because things that I knew from the years when I went to school at the SC, how to sell a product.
Yes.
And this part, it may be interesting to you. There was a movie producer. His name was Sam Katzman. He used to do Tarzan movies.
Okay.
Only. And then this is he telling us in the class. They bring him the people from Hollywood to tell us what to expect and so on. He says, so this guy makes this movie so bad that they don't want to put him in a movie theater. And the guy is successful doing Tarzan movie, but a scary movie. So they figured out to do this. They take the movie to London, buy $1 million insurance, that if you watch this movie, you have a heart attack. It's so scary, you get $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So they put on the screen, promote it, the whole nine yards. People go out there thinking something scary has happened. By the time the people got the idea, they made enough money to pay for the movie. Wow. So this is how I learned how do you promote product.
Gimmick.
So gimmicks and the results. So what did I have? I had the looks, I had the knowledge, I had the man who was successful was going to come and help me to put the studio together, advertise in the Mercury News, and that's all you could do. You could not advertise in the radio, not much, but TV was very expensive. But I knew how to make the film.
Right.
So I did my promotion, I'll tell you later on, in Channel 36, and that's a whole new story.
Yeah.
So when I got to San Jose at the dance studio, the Fred Astaire dance studios. I called it Fred Astaire because it was much better known than Bill Williams because he was popular in L.A. But here, San Francisco had Fred Astaire, so I had it Fred Astaire studio.
And you were allowed to do that?
You have the name and you pay them royalty every month. And then I started doing what I used to do in LA. So I have the parties, I would get a local band, and in the parties, we'll do the exhibitions. And the people here didn't even know what this is life.
Right.
In San Jose,
it's
farmland. Pruneyard didn't exist.
Yeah.
And the downtown San Jose did not have anything other than two ballrooms. They were only beer. And they mostly were doing Latin dances. And they had to go to San Francisco to Carousel Ballroom to dance.
Okay.
Or go to Oakland, Alabama Ballroom to dance.
Okay.
So here
and
I am.
And none of those exist today.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. And no, they're not.
No.
So my little dance studio, after 6 months, I went into a bigger dance studio, which was on First Street next to the movie theater upstairs. It's called the Beehive now.
Oh, it was the Beehive. Yes.
Beehive.
Okay. Yes.
I built that one as a Fred Astaire dance studio.
Okay.
And that one got so busy that one day they told me about this place in downtown San Jose on Notre Dame Avenue behind the Anza Hotel. I went and took a look at it. 20,000 square feet, 2,000 people, ballroom dance. Now I can bring Guy Lombardo, Harry James, Lawrence Welk, the people that we were playing and dancing with.
Yeah.
We can have it live.
Wow.
But there is no liquor license.
Mm.
And I go,
what was the name of the studio at the time?
Well, it was actually
just a warehouse?
Yeah, it was someplace they used to keep materials or things like that.
Got it.
But not a ballroom dance. It originally was a ballroom. I can't remember the name. They had
that's a Starlight concert. Ballroom, right?
No, Starlight was mine.
Okay.
And it will come to me, the name. But they closed it down because there was a band was supposed to come, and it didn't show up. And the people wanted their money back. The owner wouldn't even give. Palomar Gardens.
Palomar Gardens, yep.
And then I even saw the pictures of it in San Jose Mercury News. The entire Notre Dame Avenue was like a garbage dump. Mm-hmm. Everybody, their beer cans and this and that, the other. The police department closed the place down.
Got it.
So San Jose Hardware, they had all of their hardware starting in there. but the look of the ballroom was there.
San so Jose I go to Hardware. ABC. You know that goes way back. San Jose Hardware was owned by the Allards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then later on, Mitchell got it when they passed away. Mitchell was the gentleman who married to the daughter.
Yeah.
And then, so I go ABC and I said, I want a liquor license. They said, you want a liquor license? You can't buy it in here. Yeah, but where can I buy it? Well, you can't. Why can't I? This is San Jose. You have to go to the police department.
Wow.
Okay. Called, made an appointment. So I went to the police department and I walk in, Chief Blackmore. He's got his feet on the table. He's got a toothpick in his mouth. So you're the Twinkle Toes who wants to get a liquor license.
They knew about you already
Oh, yeah. And I'm 26 years old. I go, oh, my God, did I step out of my rug? What do you want it for? I said, sir, I'm a ballroom. Yeah, I know you're a ballroom dance teacher. What do you want a liquor license for? Well, sir, my students go to dance in San Francisco and Oakland. We're not a village in here.
Yeah.
We're an upcoming city. Why can't we have one? So you're being a smartass, huh? Sir, I just want to teach my people how to dance and have fun.
Yeah.
And he goes, what about the fights? I said, sir, people are 30 years old. They're not going to fight. 40 years old, they're not in the fighting time. Luigi, this police officer comes in. This Twinkle Toes wants a liquor license for his ballroom. Should we give it to them? What happens if they fight? He pulls up his baton. I'll give him the Italian sausage.
Oh, wow. I'm going, I suppose. God,
what did I ask for? Do I need this?
Wow.
And then he said, okay, I'm going to give you Luigi and another matron. At the time, police officers could not touch women. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a female officer. Very nice lady, sweetheart. So they gave it to me, and Mercury News put a big article in the front of it. If you go and take a look at it, it is rising like the phoenix. We'll have to look for that. Yeah.
Okay, rising of the phoenix.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then, so we got a very good publicity on it. And when we were finished, everything was done. Then I brought the band, first one, from Guy Lombardo.
What's the name of your, are you using the Palomar name or
you rebranded? It's still Fred Astaire Dance Studios.
Okay.
Starlight Ballroom.
Got it.
So the dance studio was still there.
Yes.
And Starlight Ballroom for Saturday night dances or Friday night dances. And then the first one I brought was Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadians.
Okay.
Can't believe it. The place sold out.
Wow.
Sold out. Every dance studio in the world that in this area, they all came there.
Wow.
All the people who thought they knew how to dance. I think what I took was customers that were going to San Francisco.
Yes.
Why not stay in San Jose?
That's right.
And then what they did, the way they gave me the liquor license, it was only limited to the side of the ballroom from one end to the other, and the alcohol have to be kept in that level. It couldn't go to the dance floor or beyond.
Right.
And I said, fine, that was great. So I was licensed in that area. And the good part of it is the part that was not licensed, then any age could go.
Yeah.
All ages. So there we checked them inside if you're over 21. But you don't have to check them. The guy's 30, 40 years old.
Yeah.
Nobody goes there.
Yeah.
So after Guy Lombardo worked, then I brought a whole bunch of really big ballroom. Went in there very good until one day my manager took me to San Francisco, a place called Dance Your Ass Off.
Mauricio Mejia Live.